Good evening. Talk about the New Jerusalem, but first, I just want to say something. So, John, good to see you, brother. It's been quite a week, has it not? And you might be saying, well, why has it been quite a week? Well, pick the reason. Last weekend, a couple of storms came through and ripped up some people's lives. And if you were one of those privileged to drive through any of those neighborhoods and see some of that damage, I don't know how you could see that and not be impacted by that kind of destruction and devastation that just came in an instant. And then to notice all over the place there are people helping, people giving up their time, spending money to help. We had donations coming in from literally all over the country and within this state and outside of this state. And it was members of the church, but it was also people who were employed to do it, but they're happily doing what they were doing, and some of those employed came from a long ways off. That was also quite something to see and very encouraging. And in the middle of everything we were doing this week about that, our nation, that's in the middle of what may be the greatest divide we've had since the Civil War, elected a new president. Well, a new old president, because he's been in that office before. I don't know if you know this or not. I saw a video last night, about three or four minutes long. Our new president, Mr. Trump, is encouraging us to buy a Bible. It's called the God Bless America Bible. You can look it up for yourself. It's King James translation of the Bible. Imagine that, a president standing up before everybody and saying, you need to buy a Bible. And this particular version, King James Version, but not the King James Version that's important, it's that with this Bible, inside this particular Bible, is a copy of the United States Constitution, among other things. And he says, we need to get back to our roots as a nation. We need to get back to Christianity and the teaching and preaching of the gospel. I thought, well, where am I? So, yeah, I saw that. I told Debbie about it. I thought, what is happening? And I'm not completely, nobody knows what's going on all the time anyway, except the good Lord above. And here we are in this world struggling on. And we lose someone who's precious and dear to us. Someone else who's precious and dear to us is down here on the front pew this morning. I'm glad it says in the scriptures that Jesus wept. So when I do, I don't feel bad about it. In this text we're going to talk about tonight, about the New Jerusalem, is filled with so much hope about now and about the future. And I've wondered before when I've read this, what is the New Jerusalem? I think it's the church, but the church is pointing us towards heaven and eternity. That's the whole point of the church. So how about if I just get into the lesson? Is this a good time to transition into doing the lesson? How about we do that? Here's from Revelation chapter 3. Now, please don't get into the habit of only looking on the screen. I put this on the screen so that it's kind of like a bullet point, but there it is. Revelation 3:12. This is when Jesus is dictating letters to the seven churches, and this particular one is to the church at Philadelphia, not the one in Pennsylvania. I hope the Lord's church is in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, but this is one that was 2,000 years ago, And this is what he says. The one who overcomes, I will make him a pillar in the temple of my God, and he will not go out from it anymore. And I will write on him the name of my God and the name of the city of my God, the New Jerusalem. So he's going to write on this saint the name of God and the name of New Jerusalem, the city of my God, which does what? Which comes down out of heaven from my God, and my new name. Jesus has a new name he's going to write. And he's going to write it with the name of God, and he's going to write along with the name of the city of my God, which is New Jerusalem. Where's New Jerusalem come from? Comes from God right down out of heaven. So it seems to me, well, it must not be heaven because it comes down out of heaven. Yet, since it comes out of heaven, it's going to have all the attributes of heaven, all the qualities of heaven in the sense of moral character, purity, all of those kinds of things. So we see it later on in Revelation 21. Chapter 3 was near the beginning, the addresses to all the churches. But in chapter 21, we read this. I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God. There it is again. He mentioned in chapter 3, now he's coming back to it. She is prepared as a bride adorned for her husband, and I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, behold, the tabernacle of God is among people, and he will dwell among them, and they shall be his people, and God himself will be among them. So he sees the holy city, New Jerusalem, not Old Jerusalem. Are we familiar with Old Jerusalem? Well, sure, we're familiar with Old Jerusalem. A lot of songs been written about Jerusalem. You can find it on the map. It's over there. You can go to it. You can see it. Incidentally, when we went, Debbie and I kind of concluded the same thing separately. Of all the places we went, Jerusalem was not our favorite. There's just so many things there. I mean, it's old, but there's so many things that you see that you have to, well, is this really where that happened? Is that really where that happened? Other places where you go, this is the place. This is the Jordan River. This is Shiloh, where the tabernacle was. This is the place up north where they offered sacrifices to their idol gods, and for which reason God sent the Israelites off away into Assyrian captivity. Those places exist, but when you go to the old Jerusalem, you don't really know if these are the places exactly where these things happened. And a lot of that stuff that was there when Jesus was there is now underground because things have changed so much and wars have taken place, conquests have taken place, much has been built atop the old. So some of those things that you would see when you go over there, you'll have to go down in the caverns and they will take you. It's interesting. There are literally excavations taking place underneath the city. It's like a mining operation, but that's how they're finding some of the old architectural things. But that's the old Jerusalem. We're talking about the new Jerusalem. Comes down out of heaven from God. There we see that idea again. And she is prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. Who in the world could the husband be if she's prepared as a bride? Because when you got a bride, how can you have a bride and not have a groom? Got to have a groom. All you got to do is see a wedding cake to know that. You never see a wedding cake with just a groom or a bride on top, do you? Where's the voice come from that says the tabernacle of God's among the people? Comes from the throne. God says the tabernacle where I'm going to live, be with you, is among people. I'm going to dwell with them. And anyway, I'm going to be their God. Revelation 21, 9 through 10. One of the seven angels who had the seven bowls full of the seven last plagues came and spoke with me saying, come here, I will show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb. There it is again. Who is the bride? Who is the wife of the Lamb? Well, who's the Lamb? Well, that's Jesus. We know the Lamb is Jesus, and he's got a bride. He carried me away in the spirit to a great and high mountain and showed me the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from heaven from God. Well, actually, in this place, he doesn't say new, does he? Just says Jerusalem, the holy city, coming down out of heaven from God. So we know it's the same thing. Incidentally, there are some things I didn't put in the PowerPoint because there's just a lot. But if you go back to Daniel chapter 2, see, you are going to have to open your Bible tonight. You can't just get away with looking at the PowerPoint. That's not fair. Daniel chapter 2. Daniel is interpreting a dream that Nebuchadnezzar had, and this dream, it's like the dream that Daniel himself had in chapter 7. It's different dreams, but exactly the same message. And so when he's interpreting this dream, Nebuchadnezzar had seen an image, four-part image, that represented four kingdoms, and the last kingdom was Rome. And it says in verse 34, "You continued looking until a stone was cut out without hands, and it struck the statue on its feet of iron and clay and crushed them. And then the iron, the clay, and the bronze, the silver, and the gold were crushed all at the same time and became like chaff from the summer threshing floors, and the wind carried them away so that not a trace of them was found. But the stone that struck the statue, what did it become? It became a great mountain, and it filled the whole earth." Now, I can't say for certain that this mountain is connected to the mountain we're reading about here in Revelation, because John says this angel carried him away where? To a great mountain and showed him the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming out of heaven from God, or the holy city, Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God. But there seems to be a connection there, if you will. Now, John chapter 3, this is John the Baptist. It's John's gospel, but John's writing about John the Baptist. And John replied, "A person can receive not even one thing unless it has been given to him from heaven. You yourselves are my witnesses that I said I am not the Christ, but I have been sent ahead of him. He who has the bride is the groom." Who's he talking about? Well, he's talking about Jesus. He came to prepare the way for Jesus. And he said, "He who has the bride is the groom." Jesus is the groom. What's the bride? Oops, not finished with that yet. But the friend of the groom, that's who John is saying he is, John the Baptist. He's the friend of the groom. He stands and listens to him. He rejoices greatly because of the groom's voice, so this joy of mine has been made full. In Matthew chapter 9, 14 to 15, the disciples of John came to him asking, "Why do we and the Pharisees fast, but your disciples do not fast?" And Jesus said to them, "The attendants of the groom cannot mourn as long as the groom is with them, can they?" Now, we just read from John's gospel about John the Baptist, who spoke of Jesus being the groom. And now we're seeing Matthew recording that John's disciples come to Jesus and ask this question about fasting. And Jesus says, "The attendants of the bridegroom," or "the attendants of the groom cannot mourn as long as the groom's with them, can they? But the days will come when the groom is taken away from them, and then they will fast." Of course, what's he talking about? But Jesus' arrest and crucifixion, and also his ascension, because the groom will be taken away from him. But that's a different story there. So in chapter 25, Jesus is telling parables. He tells several parables to try to prepare those listening for what he expects of them until he returns in the final judgment. And this one parable is of the 10 virgins. "The kingdom of heaven will be comparable to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the groom." So they're going out to meet the groom. "Five of them were foolish and 5 were prudent. For when the foolish took their lamps, they did not take extra oil with them, but the prudent ones took oil in their flasks with their lamps. And while the groom was delaying," what does that mean that the groom was delaying? He's trying to get them to see, "I'm leaving, but when I leave, I'm promising to come back. And you better be ready." That's the whole point of faithfulness. Be faithful. How long? In Revelation, "Be thou faithful unto death, and you will receive a crown of life." So Jesus is saying, "I'm going to be arrested, tried, crucified, and buried. 3 days later, I'm going to resurrect, but after that, I'm going to ascend back to the Father. But as I'm leaving, I'm coming back." What did Jesus tell his apostles in John chapter 14? "I'm going to do what? I'm going to go prepare a place for you that when it's ready, I'm coming back." So that's what this is all about. This parable is about his return. At midnight, there finally was a shout, "Behold the groom! Come out to meet him." All those virgins got up and trimmed their lamps, but the foolish virgin said to the prudent ones, "Give us some of your oil, because our lamps are going out." However, the prudent ones answered, "No, there most certainly would not be enough for us and you too. Go instead to the merchants and buy some for yourselves." Apparently they had an all-night Walmart or something. I don't know. But while they were on their way to buy the oil, the groom came. What's he talking about? He said, "I want you to be ready. Don't be like the foolish virgins who didn't have enough oil to stay ready." They weren't ready. They went off to buy oil, and while they were gone, the groom came. Jesus said, "That's the way it's going to be in the end. I'm going to come back, and some won't be ready." Those who were ready went in with him to the wedding feast. The wedding feast. The wedding feast. The New Jerusalem is what? She's coming down out of heaven as a bride adorned for her husband. And when he went into the wedding feast, the door was shut. Galatians. Now this text, go ahead and go to this text. I've got a portion of it here for us to read on the PowerPoint. But Paul is, he's writing to the churches of Galatia, and the problems that the problem that the churches in Galatia were facing is that there were Judaizers, and all a Judaizer is somebody who's trying to turn people back to Judaism, come back to the law of Moses. And Paul is writing to them saying, do not go back to the law of Moses. If you go back to the law, you've fallen from grace. There is no grace for you, like Mike was talking about this morning. How horrible would that be to lose grace because you went back to the law? He says, don't do that. And he says, if anybody preaches another gospel other than what we've preached to you, let him be accursed. Yes, because you're going to miss out on this marriage of the Lamb and the bride and the New Jerusalem. That won't be part of your life. And so you need to understand that there are two covenants, and that's what he's talking about here in Galatians chapter 4. Now, I'm going to start in the Bible. Just got this text on the PowerPoint to reference it to us. But look at verse 21 of chapter 4. Galatians chapter 4, verse 21. Tell me, you who want to be under law, do you not listen to the law? For it's written that Abraham had two sons. What part of the law is that written in? Well, that's Genesis. That's the very beginning. Abraham had two sons, one by the bondwoman and one by the free woman. Who was the free woman? Sarah. Who was the bondwoman? Hagar. But the son by the bondwoman was born according to the flesh, and the son by the free woman through the promise. What does that mean? Was Ishmael somehow illegitimate? And the answer to that would be no. However, God had made Abram and Sarah a promise. I'm going to give you a son. Ishmael was not the son God had promised. That was a different plan. God did not say, Abram, I want you to go to your handmaid or to your wife's handmaid, Hagar, and have a son. He said, no, you and Sarah are going to have a son. So this was the son of the promise, who was Isaac. Isaac was the son of the promise. And that's what's in view here, the differences between these two boys. It says in verse 24, this is allegorically speaking, for these women are two covenants, one proceeding from Mount Sinai, bearing children who are to be, what's it say? Slaves. They're to be slaves. She is Hagar. Now this Hagar is Mount Sinai in Arabia and corresponds to what? The present Jerusalem, not the new Jerusalem. Hagar corresponds to the present Jerusalem. For she is in slavery with her children. Now, why does he say that? Well, Christ has come. The Redeemer has come. The Messiah has come. Those who rejected the Messiah did not gain freedom. They remain in bondage. That's what Paul's talking about. Two covenants are in view, and one covenant, if you keep holding on to it, you're going to remain in bondage. You need the new one. Verse 26. But the Jerusalem above is free. She is our mother. For it's written, rejoice, barren woman who does not bear. Break forth and shout, you who are not in labor. For more numerous are the children of the desolate than of the one who has a husband. And you, brethren, like Isaac, are children of promise. But as at this time, or as at that time, he was born according to the flesh, persecuted him who was born according to the Spirit. So it is now also. What's he talking about? He's saying these Judaizing teachers, These men who were saying, you got to go back to the law of Moses, they are persecuting you because they relate to Hagar. They relate to the present Jerusalem. They relate to bondage and slavery. But the Jerusalem above is free. The Jerusalem above relates to Isaac and the son of the promise. Isaac was the son of the promise. Was there another son of the promise? Well, you could say Jesus was a son of the promise. And he brings freedom. What did Jesus say? If the Son will make you free, you shall be free indeed. And that's what Jesus has done. That's what Paul is talking about. That's why he says at the beginning of this letter, anybody who preaches a different gospel to you, let him be accursed, because he's robbing you of your freedom. He says you need to go back to the law. You're going to lose your grace. Don't do that. Two covenants, one corresponding to old Jerusalem, and one is a new Jerusalem. He says, cast out the bondwoman and her son, for the son of the bondwoman shall not be an heir with the son of the free woman. So then, brethren, we are not children of the bondwoman, but of the free woman. And the free woman corresponds to the new Jerusalem. That's from Galatians. Look at what he says in, I worked all that trying to put those there's underlines in there and didn't even use them. Too bad. 2 Corinthians 11:2. Writing to the church at Corinth. He's been preaching to them, converting them to Christ. I'm jealous for you with a godly jealousy, for I betrothed you to one husband so that to Christ I might present you as a pure virgin. How much more clear could it be that the relationship of the church and Jesus is in view here? That's what Paul is writing about. Now, there's another text, it's a long one, it's from Ephesians chapter 5, but he does essentially the same thing here. He likens the relationship of Christ and the church to a husband and wife, or a groom and a bride. If you look at Ephesians 5, I usually start in verse 21 where it says, be subject to one another in the fear of Christ. I always start there because I think that's important, that we learn to be in subjection to one another. In other words, if you have needs that I can fulfill, I need to submit myself to trying to fulfill your needs. That's how we subject ourselves to one another. We don't say, oh, you're in charge of me. That's not being in subjection. That's not the point. It's thinking and caring enough about one another that we will sacrifice for the other's good. That's what that's all about. And then he says in verse 22, wives, to your own husbands, be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband's the head of the wife, as Christ also is the head of the church, he himself being the Savior of the body. And then he says in verse 25, husbands, love your wives. How? Just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. So he's talking about this relationship in marriage, but look what he says when he gets down to verse 32. This mystery is great, but I'm speaking with reference to Christ and the church. In other words, this whole teaching about the relationship of husbands and wives is based on Jesus and the church, the groom and the bride. Now, what I'm saying is this. If we understand all of this from what John the Baptist said and what Jesus said and what Paul has written, if we understand all those things and this idea of the two covenants, then by the time we get to what John is writing from the words of Christ in chapter 21 of Revelation, we wouldn't have any question about what the New Jerusalem is. Coming down out of heaven. It's not heaven, it's coming down out of heaven. Coming down out of heaven as a bride adorned for her husband. So what is the New Jerusalem? It's a name that's going to be written on every saint. Comes down out of heaven, dressed like a bride made ready, linked with God, dwelling among men. The tabernacle of God's going to be among men. That's what's said when the New Jerusalem comes down. She is the wife of the Lamb. That's what the angel said to John. Let me take you into this great mountain and show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb, waiting for her groom to return, waiting to be able to talk clearly without getting your tongue in the way. That's from the parable, the virgins, 10 wise or 5 wise and 5 foolish. And it corresponds to the new covenant. With all these things prior to this, see, if we didn't put this together, when we get to chapter 21 of Revelation, we'd read them, oh, I wonder what the New Jerusalem is. But if we knew these things beforehand, we'd be able to put the puzzle together a little better. Now, why is it important to know this? What do a lot of people believe the New Jerusalem is? And I'm not being critical. I think a lot of people read that and they think it's heaven. Well, what horrible thing is going to happen if you believe that the New Jerusalem is heaven? I really don't know of anything. But here's why I think it's important to know the difference. Number one, God knew what he meant when he wrote to us about the New Jerusalem through his Son, as Jesus dictated this letter to John. And whatever God means about something, that's what I want to know. That's how I want to understand it. Number two, if we can see how we can get these ideas confused, that the New Jerusalem might be heaven itself when it very clearly says otherwise, then that ought to help me to see, you know, if I'm not careful, I could get something else confused that might have more despicable, a more despicable outcome. Just like the Galatians. Somebody comes, oh, you need to keep the law of Moses. Well, you know, that doesn't sound too bad. I mean, you know, it says honor your father and mother and all the things that are in the law. The Pentateuch, that's heavy stuff. That's weighty stuff. And so you might be fooled into thinking, yeah, you know, we probably ought to keep the law too. We better do the circumcision thing and everything else that goes with the law. And Paul says, no, that is so wrong. If anybody teaches you that, let them be accursed. Wow, now that's pretty serious. So when I read this, this shows me, I don't want to say in an innocent way, but in more of a safe way, because it sounds like a grocery store, doesn't it? But in a way that it's not going to be a horrible thing if you misconstrue that the New Jerusalem is heaven and not the church. But it's still inaccurate. It's still wrong. But you can see, hasn't God provided enough information that you can figure out what the right thing is? What other areas of biblical teaching have people gotten confused? You ever heard of somebody praying to Mary? Yeah. Where's that found in the Bible? Nowhere. But doesn't that sound nice? I mean, who doesn't love Mary, the mother of Jesus? And it sounds innocent enough until you start to realize, wait a minute, Jesus was the one given all authority in heaven and earth. He didn't say, my mom, see my mom. Don't bypass Jesus by going to his mom. That's not biblical teaching, even though it might sound right. What about somebody who says, well, baptism is an outward sign of an inward grace? Tell me that doesn't sound poetic. That's just a beautiful way to say it. The only problem with it is it's not accurate. Sounds nice, but it's not accurate. Somebody else comes along and says, oh, you can never lose your salvation. What a wonderful thing is that to believe that there's no way you could ever lose your salvation. The only problem with that is there are so many passages in the scriptures from Jesus himself and from his apostles that show us, yeah, you can lose your salvation. Paul even says that he would buffet his body every day. He would make sure that he was disciplined so that he wouldn't lose his salvation. And Peter wrote about those who, like dogs, returned to their vomit. And he said that the latter end is worse than the first. Now, what was the first end? The first end was condemnation to hell. And Peter says, well, but if you know the truth and you go away from it, it's going to be worse. Back to that letter to the churches of Galatia. If you were to read in chapter 5, he would say, you are fallen from grace, you who go back to the law. Now, fallen from grace seems to mean to me you don't have any more grace. So there's all these teachings that can be misconstrued, even though they sound nice. And this, to me, helps me to understand, all right, I can figure it out. You don't have to be a rocket scientist or a brain surgeon. You just have to be willing to do a little bit of work and do a little bit of research. This has been very interesting to me because for a long time I thought, oh, he's talking about heaven here in Revelation 21, but I don't believe he is now. However, don't get too far away from this now. Where does the church come from? If the New Jerusalem is the church, where does it come from? It comes down out of heaven. Who's it from? It's from God. It's from heaven, the place, if you want to call it a place. It's from God, the person. So it stands to reason that whatever you read about the New Jerusalem, it's going to have heavenly attributes. And doesn't the church have heavenly attributes? And I know what he says. He says in one place, God's going to wipe away every tear from their eye, which tells me, well, there must be some tears. But what a comforting thing to have God come to you and wipe your tears away. It says also in chapter 21, there won't be any more death. How do we explain that in light of Randall's passing? Well, go back to John 11 and think about what he says there. This is the same Jesus in John 11 that's dictating this revelation to John the Apostle. So we're reading what John the Apostle wrote about Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead. Look at verse 25 of chapter 11. Remember, Jesus hasn't raised Lazarus at this point. He's just in Bethany and he's talking to Mary and Martha and he's about to raise Lazarus. But Martha's got an issue with him. And Jesus says to her in verse 25, Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live even if he dies. And everyone who lives and believes in me will, what's it say? Never die. I'm convinced if Randall could be here tonight and tell us what he went through today, what he experienced today, we would ask him perhaps, Randall, did you die? What do you think he would say in light of what Jesus said? Say, man, I never died. I was dying while I was alive. But once I passed, I am confident Randall would tell us he's never been more alive than he is right now. What do you think about that? That's what I have to think when I read what Jesus says. That's solid stuff right there. That's what the New Jerusalem is all about. That's what the church is all about. Once you come into the church, you won't die again. Now your body will waste away. Take a look at me. Did you see that picture of me running through the veterans thing this morning? It was like, who is that kid? Who is that boy? Yeah, it's me. This is what happens if you stay alive long enough. And gravity's still working. But I'm confident of this. When the day comes that I close my eyes for the last time, I won't be dead. I won't be dead. You won't be dead either. As long as you're in that New Jerusalem. That's why God sent the New Jerusalem down to us out of heaven. The tabernacle of God is with men. And you're in part of it right here. This is God's tabernacle. Not this building, but the Lord's church. He built it and he paid for it through his son's blood. And here you are tonight in the New Jerusalem. Not the old Jerusalem, the New Jerusalem. It's come down to us out of heaven from God. Bride of the Lamb. How about that? I'm encouraged so much by these things. I hope it's been an encouragement to you tonight. So there's the lesson. We'll talk about this probably some more in our Revelation class, but you may have some questions and you may disagree with me, and that's okay too. Shouldn't Christians be able to disagree with one another and talk things out based on what the Scriptures say? I think so. So anyway, I don't know where you are in your walk with the Lord, but I hope you're with him tonight. But if you're not part of the New Jerusalem, if you're not in there, if God hasn't written his name on you, just like Jesus said to the saints in Philadelphia, oh, we need to talk about that. So if you want to talk about that, you need prayers of the church, whatever it might be. We're going to stand and sing a song of encouragement. Here comes Johnny to lead us in that. So let's all stand up with Johnny and sing this song together.